So I want to talk a little bit about the parasha and also talk some about Chanukah. So try to tie everything together. Hashem. So when the parasha begins, if you have your stone parasha, 2:23. And the parasha is Miketz. And we're going to talk just a little bit about the word Miketz. Vayehi Miketz Masayim Yomim. It happened at the end of 2 years. To the day, that's how they translate it. Miketz. So, this was at the end of 2 years, and then we have everything that happened that eventually Yosef was released from prison because in order to interpret Pharaoh's dream. And Rashi here, interestingly, gives us the translation of the word Miketz. Seems like the word Kates is not such a common word. And Rashi says that Kates, he says, Kitargumo, he quotes the Targum Unkelis, that the word Miketz means Misof, means at the end. The Hava Misof, Sof means end. So Miketz means it was at the end of 2 years. And Rashi continues and says, V'chol Lashon Kates Sofu. The word Kates, wherever you find it, always means the end. So the question arises, if the word Kates is seemingly not the commonly used word to mean end, so why does it use that word? Why doesn't it just use the word self, which seems to be the more common word? There were other ways. I guess if you look carefully in the Chumash, we'll find other ways that it describes something happening after 2 years pass. And it doesn't usually use this word, Kates, after some time passes. It could have used the word self. It could have used probably other ways it could have said it also. The word Kates is not such a usual word. Why is that word the word that's used here? That's the question. Now, there's an interesting thing in the Medrash Rabbah here, which I think we may have spoken about previous years, but bears repeating. The Medrash Rabbah here quotes a different pasuk that uses the word Kates. It's a pasuk in Eov. Kates Som Lachoshech, which translates, he placed an end for darkness. Kates Som Lachoshech. It seems to be talking about Hashem. And Hashem made an end for darkness. And then the Medrash explains what that's referring to. Says the Medrash, Zman Nosan La'olam Kama Shonim Yasab Afela. Hashem gave a time for the world, how many years it will exist in darkness. And he says, and that's what it means, Ketsom HaChoshech, the darkness. It continues here, the Medrash, and it says the darkness is talking about the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, that when, as long as the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination is in the world is a dark place. And when the Yetzer Hara, becomes uprooted from the world is no longer a dark place. And that's what the pasuk is referring to when it says, Kates Som Lachoshech, that Hashem made an end for the darkness. And then the Medrash continues and it says, Dabar Acher, something else, Kates Som Lachoshech, says the Medrash, and then that talks about something that more connected to the Parsha. Zman Nosam LeYosef Kama Shonim Yasab Afele B'Beis HaAsurim. Hashem made a certain time, period, that Yosef should be in the darkness, in the dungeon, in the jail, in the prison. Kivin Shehagia Kates. And when the time expired, then Chalom Paro Chalom, that's when Paro dreamed his dream. So the Medrash is bringing this pasuk, Kate Som Lachoshech, an end is given to, and it's seemingly connected to the words, Miketz Shmasayim Yomim, the end of the 2 years. First, it talks about the darkness being the darkness of having this world, the world in general, being a place of an evil inclination, meaning people have this inclination to do bad things. And unfortunately, that inclination is followed through many times. And that makes the world a bad place, a dark place. I'm sorry. But that darkness has an end. Eventually the Yetzer Hara will be gone and the world won't be a dark place. And that somehow ties together with the Yosef being in jail, and when the end came, he left. What's the connection? What's this idea? Kate Soma Choshev. Altogether, what's the connection between the world being in darkness because of the Yetzer Hara and Yosef being in jail? And both of them are described by the word Kate. Okay, that's the questions on the parasha. Now, as far as Chanukah goes, so I want to just ask a question or two about Chanukah. The Gemara tells us, and the halacha is, and this is the custom, that on Chanukah, that's the special Torah reading that we do in shul on Chanukah, every day of Chanukah, including Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, we read a section that deals with the Chanukah Samizbeach, the dedication offerings that the Nesiim, that the princes of the tribes brought when the Mishkan, when the tabernacle had its grand opening, and there were, for the first 12 days, there were special dedication offerings that were brought. And that's the Torah reading for Chanukah. And I think presumably the reason why that's connected to Chanukah is because at the time of the Greeks, when they issued their decrees against the Jewish people and against the Jewish religion specifically, the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, was shut down and it was defiled, and there were no karbonos being brought, there were no offerings, and when the victory came and they were able to rededicate the Beis HaMikdash, so they rededicated the Mizbeach, so therefore there was a kind of a reenactment, so to speak, of to some extent, of that rededication that happened years before in the Mishkan, and that's when we read that on Chanukah. But that being the case, it seems somewhat strange that that's the aspect of Chanukah that we emphasize with the Torah reading. It would seem that that particular aspect of the miracle of Chanukah, the fact that that the Jewish people were able to go back to the Beis HaMikdash and bring the offerings, that would seem to have little to do with us today, because at least on the surface of it, it would seem to have little to do with us today, because the Beis HaMikdash was subsequently destroyed, and again, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash and we don't have the Karbanos. So why still do we celebrate Chanukah? So it would seem that we celebrate Chanukah for other reasons. At least we can think that we celebrate it for other reasons, that we still have the, like we say in the Al Nisim, that the Greeks try to get us to forget the Torah and not to be able to do mitzvos. And now we can learn the Torah and do the mitzvos. That's true. And that we still, till today, we have the ability, thank God, to learn Torah, to do mitzvos. That's correct. But we don't have the ability to bring karbonos in the Beis HaMikdash at this time. So why are we emphasizing by the Torah reading, that aspect of Chanukah, which seems not to be applicable to us anymore? I think that's kind of, if we think about it, it's kind of strange. That's a question I wanted to ask. And then one other thing I want to mention, the on the last day of Chanukah, which is coming up on Friday, the Torah reading on Friday actually finishes up the 12. There's only 8 days of Chanukah, and there's 12 days of dedication described in the Torah. So it's a rather long Torah reading on Friday. We have the 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And then it goes right into the next parasha. And the next parasha is the beginning of Parashas Bahaloscha, which discusses the mitzvah to light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, or in the Mishkan. So we read that part also, and that seems very apropos. That part actually seems very apropos to Chanukah, even for us, because it has the it has the candles, the mitzvah of lighting the one candles, the mitzvah of lighting the neiros, the candelabra, the oil in the Mishkan or in the Beis Hamikdash. But there's a famous medrash which is quoted in Rashi at the beginning of that parsha, and the medrash goes something like this. It says, why is the section dealing with the menorah written right after the section dealing with the Nesiim, with the princes bringing their karbonos and mizbeach? So it says in the medrash the following. It says that Aaron the high priest, when he saw that the princes all brought these offerings for the dedication of the mizbeach, it says chalso daiti. He says he felt bad. Why did he feel bad? Because neither he nor his tribe of Levi were involved in that. Though it was 12 tribes, but to the Ephraim and Manasseh were divided into two, and Levi wasn't included. So Shevet Levi did not take part in the dedication offerings. So Aaron felt bad. So Hashem said to Aaron, don't worry. You have something even greater. You have the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. And everybody wants to know why was that, of all things, why was that the consolation for Aaron? So the Ramban, there's a well-known interpretation of the Ramban. The Ramban says something very fascinating. The Ramban says that there's something very special about the menorah, or the menorah service in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Mishkan that was different than all other things. He says everything else that was done in the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it stopped. We don't have any more karbonos anymore, any more offerings of animals, or any more meal offerings. We don't have ketores, we don't have the incense, we don't have any of those things. But one thing we still have, and that's the menorah. Where do we have the menorah? Explains the Ramban, he's basing it on perhaps another medrash. We have the menorah that we light on Chanukah. And that was the consolation for Aaron HaKohen, that you have something greater. You have something that lasts even much further than even the Mizbeach and the Karbonos. You have the menorah. So that's how the Ramban explains it. So first of all, I think that kind of even strengthens that question before, that if the menorah is something that was given to Aaron as a consolation, that he wasn't involved in the Chanukah, in the dedication of the Nesiim. So why are we stressing the dedication of the Nesiim today when that actually doesn't apply? It actually represents something that doesn't apply today. That was it. That kind of strengthens the question I had before. But in addition, we have to understand this altogether. Like, why is that the menorah, or in what way is the menorah that we light today a continuation of the menorah that was done in the Beis HaMikdash? Would seem like, of all everything else in the Beis HaMikdash, you need to have a Beis HaMikdash. So what's the idea that the menorah of all things is able to outlive the Beis HaMikdash? What's that concept? And that's what that has to do with Chanukah. And so those are our questions. Two questions on the parasha. Why the word kates, if it means end? And secondly, on the medrash, what's the connection, the kates, to the darkness and the darkness of the Yetzer Hara? And that's somehow connected to the kates of Yosef's stay in prison. And then also, as far as Hanukkah, why do we read about the Nesiim, the princes Karbonos? That doesn't seem to be relevant to us today. And also, what's this idea that the menorah that we light is a continuation of the service in the Beis HaMikdash? Those are the questions we want to get to tonight, as Hashem and the time that we have. So, let me begin by talking a little bit about the word kates. We'll start with the parsha words, and we'll get to the Chanukah part afterwards. So the word kates, and I think this may sound familiar to some of you, I may have spoken about this in previous years, but the word kates, yes, it means end, but there's actually two different kinds of ends. And we can give an example, which is the example of Yosef and his prison term. There are two ways that a person can get out of prison. One way a person can get out of prison is if they serve their time. They have they're sentenced for 12 months in prison. They stay in 12 months in prison and they get out. Then there's a different way that a person can get out of prison. A person could be in prison, life imprisonment. There is no time. And then he can get out, maybe the president, he can get presidential pardon, and he goes out. Okay? Now, both of those things are called our ends. His prison term came to an end. But there are two different kinds of ends. The kind of end, let's start from the second one. The kind of end by a presidential pardon is that it's not that there was something inherently in his prison term that it expired. His prison term didn't expire. His prison term would have gone on forever, the life in prison. Something came from the outside and ended it. That's one kind of end. But then there's another kind of end, and the other kind of end is actually called a kates. Kates, the word kates, I once heard, is related to a word that's found it's found more in the Talmud, I think, this word. I don't think it's a biblical word. But there's the word kitzvah. Kitzvah means when there's a set amount to something. Something that has a set amount. So the word kates actually in the Torah is also used by an object. We have the ktsos achoshen, the edge or the end of the breastplate. It's called the kates. It's called the kates, an end. So now the end of a physical object obviously means every physical object has a finite measurement. It only takes up a certain amount of space. When you get to the end of the space that it takes up, that's the kates. So that's the kates of something that has a defined, intrinsic end to it. That's the word kates. So a prison sentence that's only supposed to be for 2 years, when it comes to an end, it came to its kates. A prison sentence that's supposed to be forever and it's suspended, even though it's in the middle, that's not a kates. So actually, the Torah is coming to tell us a chiddush, something we wouldn't have otherwise known regarding Yosef's prison sentence. Now, Yosef's prison sentence, did he have a 2-year sentence? Or did he have a life sentence? So I think normally we would think, and even just from reading the Chumash itself, we would think he didn't just have a 2-year sentence. He was pulled out of jail because Paro needed him, right? His when he got out of jail after 2 years, it wasn't because his term, he served his term. No, his term would have kept on going indefinitely. Right? So really, the word kates would seem to be inappropriate. It didn't come to there was no 2-year term that was served. Says the Torah, no, we're making a mistake. We think that there was no 2-year term, but really there was a 2-year term. It wasn't a 2-year term. Paro didn't give him a 2-year term, but Hashem gave him the 2-year term. So Mikates, the Sayyid Yomer, was at the end of the 2 years that Hashem said he should be in jail for. That's when he came out. And that's the idea. Kates, Soma Choshech, the Medrash is saying, one interpretation of that pasuk is that the Hashem puts an end to darkness, that even though it looks like the darkness is infinite, so the darkness is going on forever, but really Hashem places boundaries on it. We may not know the boundaries, we may not see the boundaries, we may not feel the boundaries when we're in it, and we kind of feels like it's going on forever, but we have to know that Hashem always puts boundaries on darkness, just like as he did for Yosef, and that's the other interpretation in the Medrash too, that in the whole world, the darkness that envelops the world, the evil inclination, all the bad, crazy, negative stuff that's happening out in our world, and it just seems to be going on and getting worse and worse, and there's no end in sight. It doesn't seem to have any kates. And so we have to understand, the pasuk is telling us that we have to have a munah. We have to realize that from Hashem's standpoint, no, there is a kates. It's not going to keep on going forever and ever. This is not an eternal existence, the existence of the darkness in this world. The darkness in this world is something that has an end, that comes to an end. That's what the Medrash is telling us, and that's what the word Kate, which is telling us, a very important and deep and not very obvious concept regarding both Yosef's personal darkness and the general darkness that there is in this world. Now, well, as far as the Hanukkah goes, so there's something very interesting I came across a long time ago in the sefer of my ancestor, the Hasidic work, the Bnei Yisrael. He quotes much earlier sources. I don't know if my mother was on it before. If my mother's listening, it's her ancestor, the Bnei Yisrael, I'm quoting. So the Bnei Yisrael quotes much earlier sources that say something very interesting about the Hanukkah lights. They say that the lights that we of Hanukkah are somehow connected to the original light, the light that Hashem created on the first day of creation. This is referring to an idea that if we go back to the Parshas Bereishis, we see on the very first day Hashem said, "Yehi or let there be light." Yehi or, and there was light, and that light was before the sun. That was a different source of light. Hashem just said there should be light, and then the pasuk continues by Yavdel, that Hashem separated between the light and the darkness. And the Rashi and the quoting our sages say that light that Hashem saw, that light that He originally created, was something which was not appropriate for the world when there are negative people in this world, Rishoyim, wicked people in this world. It's that light should not be here. And Hashem put that light away for the tzaddikim la'asadlava, for the righteous in the future. But our earlier, more Kabbalistic kind of sources, that even though that light is not readily available in general, but we have on Hanukkah, and maybe soon we'll see it's not only on Hanukkah, but on Hanukkah, when we light the candles, the Hanukkah candles, we're somehow getting a little peek of that light that Hashem created at the beginning of creation that He put away for the tzaddikim in the future. Somehow that's reflected in the menorah. Now what does that mean? Now, I'll tell you more. It's not just on Hanukkah that we have somehow, we're told we have access to that light. Every morning, but in the Shachris, davening, the weekday, and Shabbos, Yontif, we have a bracha, we have a long blessing that we say right after Baruch Hu, before the Shema, that starts off with the words, Yotzer Or, that Hashem formed the light. And then that goes on for a while. And then afterwards, we have an ending, which is the end of that whole section, which goes like this. Or Chodosh Al Tzion Toir. We ask Hashem that He should shine a new light on Tzion. V'nizkech ulanu mehera la'oro, and all of us should merit quickly to its light. Baruch Ato Hashem Yitzayim Oros, and we bless you, Hashem, the former of lights. So the one of our great commentators, the Tor, explains that why this bracha would seem to be a bracha on the light. Every morning when it gets light, the sun comes up, we make a bracha acknowledging the light. That's what seems to be the subject of that bracha. But somehow we start talking about other kinds of light. Or Chodesh Al Tzion Torah, a new light on Tzion. And the Torah explains that Or Chodesh Al Tzion Torah, that new light is actually a very old light. That new light is the light from the first day of creation. The new light that we're asking Hashem to shine on Tzion is because Hashem created that light in the first day and He put it away for the future. So we're asking that future should come, Mehera should come quickly, and we should all have access to that light. But what's astounding is that every single day we make a bracha thanking Hashem for the light of the first day of creation, which would seem to be ancient history, just about as ancient as you can get. And it's something that hasn't happened, that we don't have yet in the future. Why are we talking about that light? But it seems like that light is relevant to us every single morning. We have some kind of connection to that light, even though that light is not here in all of its glory by any means, but we somehow or other are coming into contact in some way with that light. So I'm going to share with you an idea that I heard I was listening to a recording of a talk given about 45 years ago or something like that, about the late Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner, who wrote a classic works, Pachad Yitzchak, on the holidays. And he explained this idea a little bit. I'll try to give it over. It was actually my father's Rosh Hashiva. And he connects this to something from the following way. He explains it the following way. What is this idea that, what was this first light? I'm trying to understand this. The initial light, the light that Hashem created on the first day, and he put it away because the world wasn't ready for it. What was that light? So our sages tell us that with the original light, Adam Arishon was able to see from one end of the world to the other. So the idea of that original light was that there were no boundaries to that light. That light filled the entire existence. It made every single thing in existence visible. There was no limitations to it. And that's what Hashem said, that in the world that we have now, where there's going to be the evil inclination, this thing's doing the wrong thing. We can't have a world that has no limitations to the light. We live in a world with limitations. Everything has to be within its boundaries, within its limits. That's the way things are right now. We don't have infinity. We don't have eternity. We don't have boundless, limitless things. And that's why that light had to be put away for the future, because that light that you can see throughout the entire universe without any limitations is not for this stage of existence. However, we could sometimes get little glimpses of eternity, of things that don't have limitations. We could get sometimes a little opening, a little picture of that. And he explained that we have the idea of nisim, of miracles. And the idea of a miracle, of a nes, is something where we're given a window that we're able to see something that breaks the limitations of the normal limitations. It's something that's out of the, no, let's take the miracles that happened at the Exodus of Egypt, the splitting of the sea, right? So normally the sea just goes. It's not able to just split and stop and that's outside of the laws, the boundaries of nature. So when the sea splits, when Moses sticks out his staff and the sea splits, so what's really happening is, We're given a certain glimpse of a world without limitations. And that's the world of the first light. And that's how the first light somehow, we get little peaks of it here and there. Now there's one very, very major area where we get the glimpse of that light, perhaps more than any other way. And for that, I have to quote one other section from the Gemara. The Gemara tells us the following fascinating thing about the menorah and the Beis HaMikdash. The menorah and the Beis HaMikdash was a certain amount of oil that was put in every night that can last through the night. And then in the morning, it was out. However, says the Gemara that there was, for a long time in history, there was a daily miracle that happened. A daily miracle. The daily miracle was that there was one of the lights that was called the Ner Maravi, the western light was, it says, it was the first one to be lit, and it was, and it was the last one to go out. It lasted all the way 24 hours, basically, from the time it was lit to from one day's lighting to the next day's lighting. It had a daily Hanukkah miracle, actually. It was the oil burning. It was enough oil to burn for 12 hours, and it burned for 24 hours. And this happened every single day in the Beis Hamikdash for hundreds of years. That's what the Gemara says. And says the Gemara, explains the Gemara, what was the purpose of this miracle? The purpose of this miracle was Eidus Hula by Eilam, that it was a testimony, Keshchina Shruya by Yisrael, that the Shechina, that the divine presence, was resting among the Jewish people. That the way the menorah burnt, the way the daily lighting of the menorah, the way it was carried out, the way it functioned, was in a way that had this constant miracle. And this constant miracle, the point of this constant miracle, was to show that Hashem rested his Shechina with the Jewish people. So, first of all, we can understand that the menorah itself, according to what we said before, the menorah itself, the lights of the menorah connected with that aragonos. They're connected with the original light, which is an original light is a light of infinity, a light of no boundaries. So therefore, in the menorah itself, that's certainly the place where the boundaries could break. And the boundaries did break on a daily basis. But the boundaries were breaking for a specific reason, in order to tell us that the Shechina is rest among the Jewish people. Now, the idea of the Shechina resting among the Jewish people, we know that although the Shechina, the idea of Shechina we usually associate with the Mishkan, with the Beis HaMikdash, like the Torah says, "V'shachanti b'socham," Hashem says, "I will dwell among the Jewish people." However, the Gemara tells us that even when the Jewish people went into exile, even after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, this is also a concept of Shechina. It says the Shechina accompanied the Jewish people into Golus. There's actually an idea that where's the Shechina when we're in Golus? When we're in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash, it's in the Beis HaMikdash. When we're in Golus, but we're in the United States of America, where is the Shechina? So this is really an idea for another whole class maybe, but there's an idea that the Tzadik HaKohen of Lublin says that he says that the Shechina, he says something very surprising. He says the Shechina is in the place where the non-Jewish government that the Jewish people are dwelling among them. It's in the seat of the non-Jewish government, or perhaps in our terms, we would say the Shechina is in the White House. Now, the Shechina is in the White House. That's cool. It's a great galus for the Shechina. The White House is nothing similar to the Beis Hamikdash, really, in any way, manner, or form. But the idea of the Shechina being in the White House means that it's where the governments are making their decisions. It's really Hashem pulling those strings. It's Hashem pulling the strings in as to what decisions the government's going to make, which ultimately affect the Jewish people and the whole world. And it says that's where the Shechina is, because that's where Hashem is connecting to the Jewish people. Because the idea of Shechina, this is really the core point here. The idea of Shechina among the Jewish people is, it's Hashem's relationship, Hashem's unending relationship with the Jewish people. And that applies in the Beis HaMikdash in a certain way. And then it applies after, when we're in Golos, in any kind of situation, applies anywhere and everywhere, but it looks different. But it's still Hashem constantly with us. And that's what keeps the Jewish people alive throughout for forever and ever. The reason why we're still here today. People have all sorts of theories. You know, the famous piece from Mark Twain where he asked the question, he says, he has this line, "All things are mortal but the Jew. What's the secret of his immortality?" So everybody wants to know, what's the secret? Why are the Jews still here? And we have all sorts of theories, but it doesn't seem to fit with any of the normal laws of history that we're still here. And we know there's only one answer to that question. There's only one real answer. The answer is the Shechina. is that Hashem is with us. Hashem is accompanying us on this thousands-year journey from country to country, from persecution to persecution. Hashem is always with us. That's the Shechina is always with us, and that's why of all things of the services in the Beis HaMikdash, the reason why the only one that continues is the menorah. Why is the menorah? Because the menorah is the testimony of the fact, testifies to the fact that the Shechina is with us. It testifies to the eternity. The Jewish people are connected to the Shechina, which is connected to the light of the menorah, which is the light of the first day of creation. It's the light of eternity. We have a connection with eternity. We want to know what we have to do with that light, with the first light of creation. The answer is, in a certain sense, we are that light of creation, the first light of creation. Because the first light of creation is the light of no boundaries, the light of eternity, the light of connection to the Shechina, of the light of the Shechina. That's what that light is. Our Chodesh al Tzion Torah, we ask Hashem to bring that light back to Tzion, to the Beis HaMikdash. That's the light. But that light of the Shechina is with us every single day. It's not the way we ultimately hope it to be, because we want the whole world to be able to see from one end of the world to the next. The light, everyone should see. The Yetzirah shouldn't exist anymore, like it says. Keit Sam Lachosher. But that light is the light of the menorah. That will, every time when a Jew stands and he lights the menorah, this is what he's thinking. And a Jew looks at the menorah, and we see those little lights, and we see what they represent. We remember the Beis HaMikdash, and we remember that connection that they had in the Beis HaMikdash, even the Nesiim, even every day of Hanukkah. We hear the Torah reading about the Nesiim bringing the Karbanos to the Beis HaMikdash, and we long for the Beis HaMikdash. We don't have that anymore. Yes, it's true we don't have the Beis HaMikdash anymore, but we still have what the Beis HaMikdash represents in its own way. But ultimately, we still have the connection. We still have the Shechina. And that's why we can even think about the Beis HaMikdash and think about what the Beis HaMikdash represents and realize what the Beis HaMikdash represents, no matter where we are, because we have that, the menorah is what reminds us that the Beis HaMikdash is with us throughout history. And that's that I think is the perhaps the answer to our questions about Hanukkah. So this is something which to bring it back to the beginning, Kate Samach Choshech, Vayimi Kate. We read Parashas Miketz always comes around Hanukkah time, and because Parashas Miketz begins with this message, we have to realize that we're living in a time of darkness. Yes, we're living in a time of limitations. Yes, we're living in a time of Yetzirah, and we can't see things, and the Choshech, the darkness seems to be going on forever. But we have to take heart, and we have to realize, no, it's not the darkness that's going on forever. It's really the darkness has a Ketz. The darkness has an end. Hashem has a plan. And where do we see that? How do we know that? Because we can feel that in our bones of our own existence. We can feel our connection to the real eternity. The fact that we're still here today gives us a window into that light. And Hanukkah is what gives us into that light. And I'll just end off with the Maos Tzur, the famous poem that we sing after lighting the Hanukkah candles. So the first stanza ends off with a hope, a prayer for the coming of the final redemption. And there we say, Oz Egmar Bashir Mizmar Hanukkah Samizbeach. Oz then Egmar, we will finish. We will complete the Shir Mizmar with song, the Chanukah Samizbeach, the dedication of the Mizbeach, meaning that Chanukah Samizbeach, dedication of the temple that happened at the time at the Hanukkah victory, that was a taste, that was a glimpse into the ability to see the light that accompanies us out the ages, which eventually will culminate in the Or Chodesh al Tzion Torah, in that light actually exploding in all of its glory, and we are, that we can see the everything from one end of the earth to the other, and that will be the completion of Egmar. That will be the completion of what Hanukkah shows us has already started, and that may that come speedily in our days.